Because you've always been sort of the leading edge of where media is going with Politico, now with Axios. You understand the environment so well. How do Democrats, and frankly, how does legacy media need to change the way it thinks about getting information? I mean, a lot of the voters who went out and voted for Donald Trump that so many people are wondering what happened here, they're not watching, frankly, this show. They're not reading the New York Times. They're not consuming media that way. And the Trump campaign found those voters where they live. So how do Democrats need to change the way they communicate to voters if you think that's part of the problem?
For sure. I mean, I think all of us have to come to grips with legacy media is just not as important as it thinks it is. There, it is to you. It is to me. That's a relatively small group of people who rely on us for their information. And you have to go into the world as it is, not as you wish it to be. And basically, the way people get information has shattered into 20, 30 different pieces. And so if you just look empirically at the numbers, Joe Rogan's more important than any of us. He just has a much bigger, hyper-connected audience that listens to his every word. So maybe listen to Joe Rogan and kind of understand, like, what is he talking about? What are the guests that he has on? What are the issues that they care about? Realize that the gravity of right-wing discourse is now taking place on X. It's not Fox. X is what matters. Elon Musk is now, I wrote about this yesterday, arguably the most powerful civilian in the history of the country. He controls information flow. He controls multiple businesses. He has the president's ear. He's going to be in charge of some newfangled organization to gut government spending. We've not seen a person with that kind of clout across those sectors. But where his real power comes from is X. People thought he was an idiot when he bought X because he lost a lot of money. He's got a lot of money. And now he happens to have the most powerful platform on the right, and politics is downstream from information. And there's just a whole new information ecosystem out there. So for us, for you, for Democrats, for Republicans, you have to understand that you now are going to have to basically navigate 20 or 30 different parts of the ecosystem if you want to connect with the American people who vote.
That was an MSNBC panel featuring Frank Bruni, the co-founder of Axios. And he was on to talk about the article he wrote the day after the defeat of Cackle's Kamala. And the article was entitled, "Democrats, Let's Get Real About Why Kamala Lost." And what's so fascinating there in that title is he's clearly saying the quiet part out loud. He is admitting, he is openly admitting that the legacy media and the Democrats are one. They're the same thing. The legacy media is the Democrat Party. They are, in effect, a Democrat super PAC. The very title of this piece admits it. Democrats, let us, I'm one of you, get real about why Harris lost. There's no pretense for trying to hide it anymore after that colossal defeat. This is what I mean when I say they're scattered to the winds at this point. The legacy media and the Democrats are admitting they are one and the same. It's finally out in the open in terms of their own admission. But what's so astonishing is that that admission, they're even admitting that their era of being able to exercise inordinate influence over American public opinion has indeed come to a very brutal end. And we all know the legacy media was the Kamala Harris campaign itself. They didn't camp. This is key to understand what we just witnessed in the last 3 months. They did not campaign for Kamala. They were the Kamala campaign. Just as they were the Joe Biden campaign in 2020, allowing him to go and hide in his basement as they functioned as his political surrogates. They did everything they possibly could to make Kamala palatable to the wider population. They debated on her behalf. They mocked and ridiculed the Trump campaign. They actually turned off the microphone of J.D. Vance. They referred to his Madison Square Garden rally as a Nazi hate fest. They did absolutely everything they possibly could, along with Oprah, along with millionaire superstars, along with that bizarre broken billionaire Mark Cuban, who's slowly turning into Rachel Maddow. They pulled out all the stops. And in the end, what happened? after doing all of that for 3-4 months, what happened in the end? Trump won his biggest victory ever. It made 2016 look like a dud in comparison. It was all for naught. As we've been predicting for years now, right? We've devoted a number of videos in the past analyzing what's been happening of late, this massive tectonic societal shift. It's all because we're entering into a new era, what scholars call the network society. If you've been with this channel for a while, you certainly know that term. That's part of this new world that's rising. We are in the midst of a network society where, because of the internet, media outlets simply no longer have a monopoly or a privilege or special access to information that's not available to anyone and everyone, right? Because of the internet, because of our hyperconnectivity, we all now have instant access to the exact same kind of information that anyone at the Washington Post or CNN or the New York Times or Fox, for that matter, has access to. And therefore, we, the people, are in a position now to fact check the self-anointed fact checkers, much better position than we were in 2020 when all the social media outlets were censoring us. That's absolutely essential for everyone to get. This is what makes what Elon Musk did so incredibly important in acquiring Twitter. This is the heart of the societal revolution that is taking place. Because the legacy media no longer has a privileged position in relation to information acquisition, they can now be fact-checked. Their reporting can be legitimately, in real time, fact-checked. And when you claim to be a reliable mediator of facts, but your supposed facts consistently turn out to be false, or even worse, blatant fabrications, blatant hoaxes, you inevitably and inexorably lose any and all of your credibility. And that's precisely what's happening to the legacy media. Again, the numbers don't lie. According to Gallup, trust in the legacy media has absolutely imploded from a high of 70% in the 1970s to now just 30%. And that trust is almost entirely coming from the Democrats. Republican trust in the media has imploded to 12%. And I don't know who the hell those 12% Republicans are. They obviously vote for Liz Cheney at this point. But again, what's so important to understand here is that this implosion in trust, I mean, almost literally zero trust in legacy media, has been inordinately influenced by the rise of the internet and the ability for people to access comparable information and draw significantly different inferences and conclusions from that information. And that's changing the plausibility, the business model of the media. So that's exactly what Elon has been saying of late. Elon is arguing that citizen journalism is the future, where the aggregate voice of the people gets to decide the narrative of what's newsworthy, not a handful of editors in chief. Again, this is why the managerial class is collapsing. If a handful of editors in chief had a special privileged position to information acquisition, fine. Yep, you get to define the terms of the debate. We get it. You get to define what's fact and what isn't. Yep, we get it. Oh, crime is going down. Yep. So you say we have no information to counter that. Oh, the border is secure. So you say, okay, we have no information to counter that. Again, if a handful of editors in chief, like they had for decades, had a special privileged position to information acquisition and monopolization, then they get to live in the world they think they're living in. They get to decide what is and what is not news, like they did for decades. But if that information has broken free, if that information has been democratized, if that information has been decentralized and dispersed among the masses, then those masses will form a consensus on what is and what is not news, not editors in chief. It's inevitable. You can't stop that. This is journalism of the people, by the people, for the people. We, the people, get to decide what is news, not a bunch of bought and paid for shills for the Democrat establishment. The days of the corporatist legacy media lecturing the nation on what we should and ought believe, lecturing us on who is the true candidate for the preservation of democracy. Those days are over. As we enter a new media era, the legacy media may indeed be going the way of the dodo bird, which will be a much deserved fate for such a blatantly partisan and corrupt industry. They literally did everything they possibly could to stop the return of Trump. Everything. They claimed to be these objective arbiters of information when in point of fact, they were left-wing Democrat activists. And it all failed. In fact, I'm going to show you how Trump right now, because of you, is stronger than ever. And we're going to have a little fun to boot. Hey, gang, with everything going on right now, it's hard to say what can happen or what will happen. And to make matters even worse, we usually don't find out until it's too late. But when it comes to your money, you should understand what's at stake. That's why I partnered with GoldCo. Now, you guys know I'm a big fan of hedging future risks with the timeless value of gold and silver. And that's why you've got to click on the link below or go to TurleyTalksLikesGold.com to get your free gold and silver kit. Gang, it's an amazing free resource that shows you step-by-step how to get into precious metals tax-free and penalty-free, even if your money's still in a retirement account like an IRA or 401k. And the best part is that you may already qualify to get up to $10,000 in free silver. You've seen the writing on the wall. Click on that link below or go to TurleyTalksLikesGold.com to get your free gold and silver kit right now, because this is about taking back control of your freedom and your privacy. We can't predict the future, but we can certainly prepare for it. So don't wait. Take action now to defend your freedom, your privacy, and your future. Click on that link below right now. All right, let's have a little fun here if we can. The now disgraced lawyer Michael Cohen, the serial liar who turned on Trump and who promised to leave the country where Trump elected. He wasn't having a very good night last night when he tried to explain to a rather bemused audience on social media why he decided he's still going to stay in the country even though Trump is president. Do we have that?
Problem. Wow. Genius you are. Can we stop with that? I appreciate it. I don't like the stupid turkeys. All right. Let's just knock that stupid shit off, please. All right. I did. I said I was leaving. And then the following day, get that through your dumb heads. The following day, I turned around and I said that there's no chance in the world that I'm leaving my country. Thank you very much. All right. I'm not leaving anyway. You leave. This is my country. And I have every right, every single right within which to turn around, would we stop so we can. All right. 2 seconds. I'm going to end up blocking this idiot.
I'm sorry. That's going to be the funniest freaking thing I've seen in years. Oh, my heavens. I don't know how they do it. I don't know what the controls you have to be able to put the turkey over. The hair and the glasses. Man, that is just too funny. All right. So where are we with the continued fallout from the greatest election ever? Right now, we are just two calls away from controlling the House. It looks like that's a done deal. We should know by the end of the day, certainly this weekend, but it does look like we have accomplished the trifecta. We've got the White House. We've got the Senate. By the way, congrats to Dave McCormick in Pennsylvania. In my own backyard here, he has officially unseated the pathetic Democrat fraud, Bob Casey. Bob Casey, I'm in the Delaware area, in the Philly area. Bob Casey ran ads showing how he was a huge Trump supporter. We need to close that border. We need to bring manufacturing jobs back home, even though he voted with Biden 99% of the time. So goodbye, Bob Casey. You will not be missed. So we got the White House. We got the Senate big time. I'm still pulling for Carrie Lake. She's looking good. She is looking good. And by the way, Arizona dudes, if I were to say your elections are third world, that would be an insult to the third world. Okay. Get your shit together and learn how to do an election like Florida does and Texas does. Get your results in the one. I mean, I don't even know what to say. And you're a red state now, too. Looks like Trump's winning by six. So he should pull Kerry over the finish line and get rid of that idiot Gallego. And so we've got the White House, we got the Senate, we got House of Representatives, we got the majority of governorships, and we got the majority of state legislatures. It is huge. And as a result, now, maybe now, finally, the Republican Party establishment will emancipate itself from the shackles of the neocon Bush era, the Karl Roves, the Mitch McConnells, the Paul Ryans, the John McCains, the Cheneys, the Mittens Romneys era. Hopefully they are forever thrown out of the party and we will never, ever look back. Look at the rightward shift here throughout the electorate. This is amazing. This, I think, is the election in a nutshell. Trump won Florida by freaking 13 points. A huge shout out to Seth Keschel. We'll have Seth back, the data analyst. Which you guys, I know you guys really liked him. We'll have Seth back on Tuesday. He's going to do a little victory lap. All, I think he had 56 different predictions. All 56 happened. All 56 were fulfilled. So he is going to absolutely, we're going to, talk about a victory lap, a very well-deserved victory lap. So Trump won Florida by 13. 4 years ago, keep in mind, Florida was a swing state. Florida was a swing state. Remember, the margin of victory in swing states are in the low single digits. They knock against the margin of error, and they're therefore flippable. Florida was a swing state. Trump won Florida in 2020 by 3.5 points. He won it by 1.5 in 2016. Hillary almost won Florida. Not to mention DeSantis coming within just a point of that crack addict becoming governor. What was his name? Guillaume? I forgot. Florida's now plus 13. The third most populous state in the union is now a solid, deep, deep, deep red state. God bless Ron DeSantis. But it's not just Florida. Take a look at Texas. Trump won by plus 14 in Texas. It was an absolute blowout, the biggest majority of any Republican since Reagan. We were wondering whether Florida might vote to the right of Texas, and Texans said, no way. You ain't, everything's bigger in Texas, including our margins. And there you guys go. So as you can see, moving from 2016 to 2020 to 2024, a massive movement, right? Particularly in the Rio Grande region of the southern border. And this means we're basically seeing the end of the Bush-dominated Texas Republican Party. The Bush Republican Party, it looks like, is finally dying in Texas, and it's being replaced with the America First Trumpian Republican Party, which means that the southern border counties that were traditionally blue, being majority Latino, are all moving to the Republican Party as a part of this permanent Latino realignment. Let's go back to that chart if we can. Excellent. So we got Trump up 13 in Florida, got Trump up 14 in Texas. Take a look at, oh, and by the way, this is how he's winning the popular vote. The second and most third most populous states in the nation are solid deep red. He's getting double digit margins in the second and third most populous states in the nation. When you start doing that, you're going to start winning the popular vote pretty regularly, especially, again, we'll see he's actually shrunk. He's cut in half the margin that the Democrats have in California. Absolutely astonishing. So get used to the Republican winning the as long as they're Trumpian Republicans, get used to the new Trumpian Republican Party winning the popular vote. Trump won Iowa by 14. Remember the now thoroughly discredited Ann Seltzer of the Des Moines Register, who's supposedly one of the greatest and most accurate pollsters in the world. She was exposed for being the fraud, the Democrat fraud that she is, by posting a Kamala plus 3 in Iowa on the Saturday before the election. She did that purposely, by the way, because she attempted to distract voters from the horrific jobs report that landed on Friday, showing that we had only created 10,000 jobs in October when it was expected that we were going to create more than 100,000. This economy could not have survived another 4 years of this and these absolutely incompetent managerial class of Democrats. So instead of talking about one of the worst job reports we have seen in years, all the talk shows did on Sunday morning were they talk gleefully, cheerfully about Kamala blowing out Trump because of this poll showing her beating him in otherwise deep red Iowa. And that was Ann Seltzer of the Des Moines Register who dropped that fraud in the midst of this election. She just happened to be 17 off. What lying scum these people are. That's a big thing, by the way. We'll talk to Rich Barris about this as well at some point, how the polling mafia was so thoroughly exposed in this last election. Even Jon Stewart of the Comedy Channel had told pollsters to basically F off. Even he recognized that all they do is lie. I mean, we've talked about this before. The polling industry is just that. It's an industry. Okay, it's a scam. It's a racket. And it's used by Democrats. Pollsters are overwhelmingly liberal, right? Because leftists, woke leftists, as part of their cultural Marxism, have taken over all of our public institutions. So what pollsters do is they put out these fake polls that Democrats use to raise money for their campaigns. They show their donors, hey, look at me. I have a chance of winning in a blowout election. The donor goes, okay, here's your $1 million, so forth. So the favorable polls are there in order to get them big checks to fund their campaigns and also to fabricate a narrative that they're winning to try to convince the masses you want to be on the winning side because nobody wants to be on the losing team. So the polling industry is predominantly left-wing. It always, always, always favors the Democrats, always polling to the left. It always polls to the advantage of the liberal for the purpose of funding their campaigns and fabricating a favorable narrative. The polling industry is there to raise money and to manipulate public opinion. And Ann Seltzer is the queen of that fraud industry. Again, going back to the chart here, if I may. So Trump further maximized his margins in Ohio. You see that Ohio was a swing state back in 2016 and 2020, as was Iowa. The winner was still winning by single digits. Those days are gone, right? But take a look here at the margins that Kamala won in otherwise reliably blue states. Look at this. Kamala won by just 5 in Jersey. 5. Look at this Jersey map. Do we have, thank you there. Do we, this Jersey map, look at that. This is a swing state in the making, gang. Take a look at that. This is a look at all the counties that turn from light blue to light red. I mean, this is crazy. We'll have Rich Barris, hopefully. I'm trying to get Rich to come on in the next couple of weeks. He's very busy, obviously, very, very, very much in demand, as he should be. One of the most accurate, once again, one of the most accurate pollsters out there. We only bring you the best. That's all I want for you guys. The most accurate election analysis out there. But again, the key here is part of the new American golden age is for this new Trumpian Republican Party. The key in all of this is that we want Trump and the new Republican Party to basically solidify the sweep on Tuesday, solidify the 7 traditional swing states as solid red, really maximize the margins there. And then what we can do for 2028 is we can basically move the swing state map to states like Maine, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Virginia, Minnesota, and New Mexico. All right, so going back, she won by just 5 in Jersey. Look at this. She won by 16 in California. Gang, Biden won California by 30. Biden won California by 30. Trump cut that in half. Here's what California, can we go to, there you go. Here's what California looks like in comparison with 2020. Take a look at that. Does that look pretty cool? It looks like it got hit by a red tsunami. This is why Laura Ingraham last night was talking about this with Laura Trump, about making a very real concerted effort to take California in 2028. And I'm with them. I think California is ripe for the taking. It's going to take some serious infrastructure building, no question, some major shifts among California's Latino population that have already begun. But if that larger national Latino realignment continues, along with an Asian realignment that's happening and the realignment we're seeing, particularly among Black men under the age of 50, California's in play. At least it will be in the next 4 to 8 years. So that'll give you an idea of just how dominant Trump was on Tuesday and the extraordinary significance of this political realignment for what's in store for us in the years ahead. By the way, take a look at this map. Anyone know what that is? Well, you can see it if you're you can read it there. Gang, that's Appalachia. So we can actually look at regions of the country, right? That's several states in the region surrounding the Appalachian Mountains, stretching from New York all the way down to Georgia. Notice how much, by the way, notice how much of Pennsylvania is in Appalachia. The vast majority of Pennsylvania, super majority of Pennsylvania's 67 counties are Appalachian. Take a look at how deep red that is. So we talk about political realignments, right? Populist realignments. But also remember, we're also seeing throughout the world now a process known as re-territorialization. It's a fancy schmancy word. Well, I was going to say it's a fancy schmancy word, but then I use other fancy schmancy words like relocalization or neo-regionalization. But basically, this is where populations are rebelling, revolting against the politics of globalism and the managerial elite by reasserting their local regional sovereignty. They're dragging their politics back to the local, which then means that the politics takes on much more identity-based frames of reference, like region, religion, race, culture, custom, tradition, so forth. So more and more populations are re-territorializing their politics, wrenching their politics away from this trans-local managerial class and reasserting their cultural and regional specificity. And you can see that that is exactly what's happening in Appalachia. And not, in a nutshell, that's why Trump chose J.D. Vance, by the way. That's what made the choice of J.D. Vance so absolutely brilliant. And again, why I think Josh Shapiro would not have helped Kamala that much. It's because, unlike Shapiro, who's very cosmopolitan and liberal, J.D. Vance actually embodies a realignment between Appalachia and Silicon Valley, as J.D. represents both the working class and the new tech right, the emerging new tech right, the new right-wing aristocracy of Elon Musk and Peter Thiel and Vivek. They all made their money in the tech world in some way, shape, or form. And this is akin to Aristotle's notion of aristopopulism, right? You're always going to have an elite. That's what Aristotle recognized. You're always going to have an aristocracy of some kind. But you want an aristocracy that uses their power and their wealth and their influence to enact and realize the values, interests, and concerns of the people. That's what a healthy society is. A society that has an aristocracy that despises the people, Aristotle would call an oligarchy, a hostile oligarchy. But a society where the people despise the aristocracy and rise up against it is the chaos of mob rule and the French Revolution and guillotines and so forth. You don't get very far with that either. What you want is a balance. You want a harmony between the elite and the wider population. And that harmony comes when the elite use their power and wealth and influence to enact and realize and celebrate and help flourish the values, interests, and concerns of the people. That's how you get these beautiful cathedrals built. That's how you get these beautiful museums built. That's how you get these beautiful symphony halls built. That's how you get SpaceX built. That's how you get Starlink built. That's exactly what I think J.D. Vance and Trump himself and Elon Musk ultimately represent. We are entering into an American golden age, a new conservative aristopopulist age, where more and more populations are returning back to nation, culture, custom, and tradition, and rejecting the globalist structures that have wreaked so much havoc and pain on our planet. This was an extraordinary week. It was the week that the new conservative age finally broke through globalist tyrannies that have done everything they possibly could to thwart our movement. Make no mistake, the fight is not over. We know that. We all know that. I don't need to tell anybody that. There's still so much more to do. But the dam has officially broken. The walls have been breached. And even the legacy media is sadly admitting it.